Hello, everyone. It is Irene. It is, what day is it? It's the 27th. It's May. It's the year 2025. I forgot it was May the other day. Seth and I were parking downtown, and you know how they have those little signs that say no parking between May, between a date and a date? And I looked at it and I said, no parking between May 22nd and May 29th. I'm like, it's not May. He looked at me, he said, yeah, it's May, Irene. So time is non-existent sometimes. Does anybody feel like time is non-existent sometimes? All right. Let's see. People are in the chat letting me know how they're doing. So one person says, feeling stuck, but happy to be here. I'm glad you're here. You're not totally stuck if you're here. You showed up. So that's progress. Growing capacity, beautiful sunny day in Edmonton, awesome, sleepy rainy day in the Netherlands, lost a dear friend, and have been definitely growing capacity. Yes, we handle death really differently when we have more regulation on board, right? We really see death and the transitions of life in a very different way from birth to the other end to when we pass and move on. So I know for many of us, we'll be experiencing people in our lives. This happens. People come, people go. And that's just part of life. And it gets easier. Doesn't mean there isn't grief. We might actually feel more grief and feel more of the emotions, which actually lets us process what happens as opposed to sticking it inside and not dealing with it, right? So some of you might be finding that old patterns of grief and things that you didn't grieve might start to come up as you become more regulated. Finding it easier to commit to live calls. Great. And then still growing capacity to do the work alone. Yes. We need to be able to do this work on our own. And we also need to have a little connection like this. We can't just have one or the other, I find. There needs to be a blend of both. Because we're not always going to have people around us. And sometimes we need to have people around us, right? We need a little bit of both. Cold and wintry here in the Cape, South Africa. Yes, you guys are going into your winter. Some frustration for being behind. Remember what I said at the beginning of this course? There's no behind. I know that's hard for many of us who see things linearly. This is why the time thing is a real interesting one. We need to work with what we can work with, based on our circumstance. And if we only get to lab one or two or three or four, as Jasneet said here, that's fine. Just remember that's better than last year, right? That's better than having not done any of this ever at all. So yes, it still is a win, right? To slow down and take your time. Hello from Denmark, my first training call this round. Awesome. Been only made it to lab six this time. So you made it to lab six this time. It's not that you made it to lab six. So that's a good thing. That's great. Nothing wrong with that. I'm a professional now in titrating, someone said. That's wonderful. Smiley face. And hello from Berlin. I am still on lab three. So I'll rephrase that. You are in lab three. Right. So the words that we use can be really, they can get us. They can be sneaky. So really watch when you're saying to yourself, I'm only here. I've only gotten to this. And just like white out that word only and just be like, I am here. I'm doing this. Right. All right. Okay. Let's get going. Thank you, everyone. So as always, the chat's here just for little comments now and again. If you have a burning question, Rebecca will be here to help out with those. But what we're going to do today is we're going to go through kind of a big review. Today is technically training call number nine. Got my handout here. If you've got your handouts, grab them. The topic today is neuroplastic healing sequencing. And then I've got a little equation here that's made up. What does it say? Theory plus practice equals application and integration. Right? So everything we've been doing is theory here and practice. What you do outside of this and outside of the lessons is application and integration. So when you find yourself driving your car and you find yourself readjusting the grip on your steering wheel because you realize you're holding it too tightly and you realize I don't need to be doing that, that's application. And then that's you integrating, right? Going to the airport, always a lovely thing to do with this stuff on board. Watching people getting stressed out about situations they can't control. I took quite a few planes this last year, and it always amazes me when people get on the plane and you're waiting to find your seat, and there'll be someone in front of you putting their bags away, and they'll be so worried because they're not going fast enough. And then they'll look at you and they'll say, "I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry." I always like to bring a little regulation to that and go, I got nowhere to be because I'm going to go and sit and then sit there for 9 hours. So you take as much time as you need. It's true. And then the guy behind me gets pissed because I'm totally not caring that it's taking a while. We will all get on the plane. We will all sit down. But that is a there is an application and integration of insight, awareness. This isn't going to speed up the plane going any faster, right? Feel your feet on the ground. Look around. Who's around, right? Who's around? Who is on the plane? Who's, what does it look like? How do people look? And just connecting this ability to orient in stressful times like that, it really shows then how we are taking this work and integrating it. And then everyday things, when you're finding yourself eating, I know some people are having a snack right now, right? Is there an ability to just feel your butt on the chair, feel the chewing, right? One does not have to watch a YouTube video when they eat. It's like the new TV, right? Let's check social while I eat. We always make fun of our parents for constantly sitting in front of a TV eating their food. At least mine did every night. Wheel of Fortune, Jeopardy, the news. And we do it now. So it's like, how can you sit and eat and look and see things and just pause and feel your digestion? Now, I'm not saying it's not nice sometimes to watch a show when we eat. Of course, we do that, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you can have one meal a day where you're just really being mindful of everything around you, how you move. So this idea back to the handout of taking the theory, the practice, and applying it, right? Back to the airplane. When you're on that airplane seat, can you feel your pelvis? Can you feel your head? Are you tense? Can you relax? Next time you go to the dentist, which a lot of us do, are you noticing that you're clenching your hands? Even with all the practice in the world, I find that I have to constantly remind myself, stop clenching, because it's not fun to have someone in your mouth poking around, even if it's just a teeth cleaning, right? So again, these are the ways that we really solidify this work. And it has to be solidified. Otherwise, we've gone through and we've learned some things and we've done some practices, but the practices alone will not create the full regulation. The full regulation happens when you put this into life, and then there's endless opportunity to practice. Right? Also, knowing when not to practice. So, what do I mean by that? What I mean is there's times where we just don't share this stuff with people. Maybe a family member is just not interested. So we just keep that to ourselves. So it's also discerning when to share this work and when to not share that work, this work, and when to just internally resource ourselves and let the stress around us play its course and not attaching to that stress, right? That is another big thing. There's always going to be something going on outside of our world, whether in our immediate family system, our community, or the world at large. And it's our choice whether or not we attach. This doesn't mean we aren't interested in things going on or concerned about certain things going on, but how can we not attach our survival physiology to these things? This is like the next part of our evolution as humans, is to, let things just be, take care of what we can take care of and go about our ways. So that's my little speech before we get started on what all this neuroplastic sequencing healing is. Just some reminders. So on page one here at the top, the power of neuroplastic healing, the five stages everyone must understand. This is an ebook I wrote a long time ago now. And it goes through what we're going to go through here today. It goes through what you all kind of know and have been learning. We touched on this last week a little bit when we went through Feldenkraisian learning and how that's a very significant way to practice neurodifferentiation. And that's why the more Feldenkraisian lessons are until we wait until lap 9 and 10 to kind of integrate those all together. Also, a little review, pre-game videos. You might have remembered at the very beginning, there was some little tiny videos on working with resistance, resting, sleeping, eating good food, physical activity, exercise, scheduling our time or not scheduling our time. Some of us are super schedulers and we do that to our detriment, and others, we kind of go through life just hoping things turn out, and that can also not be good too, right? So how do we have a healthy regulation and awareness about what has to get done in our days, what can be left, what needs to be prioritized? And also sometimes we have to push a little bit. Sometimes things have to get done. We're not living in that old, that people often say, oh, back in the hunter-gatherer days, life was so much easier. It was, but there were a lot of threats, right? Also, and life was quite hard. So how can we take the beauties of our more industrial world, running water, right? The things that we like, food that can be cooked inside of our homes, but then still come into our biology when we're with those things. Three-part healing trauma video training. Again, this is just a review of other resources that you can take in and review at the end of this 3 months. Sometimes when you go back to the things that you learned at the beginning, new insights pop up, right? New insights pop up. Just like you'll rewatch a show that you love, or you'll reread a book that you really like, right? There's nothing wrong with this repetition. And then I mentioned this the other day, but I'll mention it again, Seth's music. Some of you thought that the music that was, I think, within the 21-day training is the same in SBSM. It's actually different. So there's a bit more composition and a bit more nuance to the music within the SBSM site. So make sure you check that out too. All right. So all this stuff is on the additional resources section of the program site. All right. So neuroplastic healing. So I've got four of those five stages here. I'm going to go through them fairly quickly because we reviewed them last week, but I just want to preface this call because we'll go into each of these four. As a reminder, the first one, I call it housekeeping of the body. Norman Doidge, where I've adapted these stages, he talks about this ability and need to keep our neurons, our brain cells, our cells healthy with good food, clean water, getting rid of toxins. This is a very highlighted topic right now, and I think that's very exciting that people are starting to talk about the fact that there's things in our air and food and water that not so good for us, right? Back in the day, we used to not think about these things, and now we're realizing these things are probably not good for us, and we want to make sure that we're moving them out of our body to the best of our ability. So that was in last week's call. So neurostimulation, that's the first word there. Neurostimulation, movement, touch, light, visualization, sound, music, everything that we've been doing in SBSM is some form of positive stimulation. Next one down, neuromodulation. Modulation, also known as regulation. So these are the words that Norman Doidge uses. He uses the word modulations. And he would say settling the noisy brain and the nervous system. So getting it into that nice flow where we're not up really high or crashing low. We're in this nice, smooth wave of regulation. C, neurorelaxation. So this is that rest that repairs and restores, neurorelaxation. Sleep, being lazy, quiet, gearing down the body's engines to just rest. D, final one, neurodifferentiation. That's what we really covered last week. Neurodifferentiation. I know I can't hear any of you, but feel free to speak these out with me as I speak them out, that I'm not alone. Neurodifferentiation. Something about saying things out loud also helps. I mean, it activates the vagus nerve, right? That ventral. So play with your words, and that's refining skills, growing options and choices. All right. Page two. Page two. And as we go to page two, just again, as always, remember to stay connected to your system, your body, right? I'm extra thirsty today, so I'm going to be sipping on liquid a bit more. So, cheers. All right, neurostimulation. So, movement, touch, light, sound, visualization. The first word there is all. 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 All labs bring in this stage. Now, there's a very long paragraph under that. I'm going to read it out because it's one of my favorite paragraphs. And it's from a book called Dexterity and Its Development. Oops. Dexterity and Its Development, written by the late Nikolai Bernstein. He's a Russian scientist, physiologist. He was around the time of Pavlov. Some of you might know the name Ivan Pavlov. He was kind of known for the dog salivating, the conditioning responses. He did more than that. He's actually got a bit more under his belt than just that one study. But they were kind of like opposite ends. Pavlov was very interested in conditioning humans and animals. And Bernstein was about our development and our complexity as humans. And so this book is pretty thick. But it's one of those books that I was instructed to read in my Feldenkrais training to just understand this dexterity, right? Our hands, our ability to differentiate, to do things, to really imagine and feel into how exquisite the human nervous system really is. And I'll give you a story. The one story he gives in the book to depict how complex we are. And this is a funny, it's like an old school story, but if you're on a ship, and not many of us would be on a ship, these days, but back in the day, people were on ships in the ocean, and real dexterity is the ability to be on the ship deck with the rain coming down, the ability to take out a cigarette, spark a match, because back then there were no lighters, right? Spark a match, light that smoke, and have it get lit while you're on this ship with rain pelting down on you. So this ability to know how to hide, to balance, to light the match, to inhale. I'm not saying that we should all smoke to experience this, but some of us, we might say, oh yeah, if I'm ever outside, and there's wind and I'm carrying things and I'm not slipping on the slippery ice or whatever, you're running up your stairs with a mug of something and you don't spill it and you have things in your hands. Look at waiters at restaurants, really high-end waiters. My goodness, I don't know how they do that. They are carrying all these things. They're remembering the order. That's true dexterity and human function. Now, some might say, well, you also might have a lot of freeze in that, maybe a lot of functional freeze, maybe, but it still shows, it's very hard to teach a robot that level of dexterity, right? So we still win at the end of the day in terms of this complexity and our ability to change and shift and orient and correct ourselves. So I wanted to give you that story because I thought that was a great story in the book, but this is a different story. So here he writes, the learn movement. So again, this is in reference to stimulation. A lot of the movement. Think about all the things, even if you're only on lab three. Right, or lab two. They're still orienting, they're still potent posture, these things. So the learn movement must be actually performed many times in order to actually experience all the sensations which form the basis for its sensory corrections. So what that means, we need to repeat things many times to be able to sense how we might improve upon those things. If anybody's raised a child, you don't teach them one day how to use a fork and knife and then they get it. It takes time. It takes time to do these things, to teach them how to cut vegetables, how to do all the things, right? How to take care of the room, tie their shoelaces, read, speak. And it's repetition, hopefully repetition with ease and engagement and not threat. Of course, many of us grew up with that kind of threat, and that's okay. We're working on that. But in this situation of our labs here and our lessons, we're relearning how to teach ourselves how to learn through these practices and really watching when we hold our breath, when we stop orienting, et cetera, et cetera. So in SBSM here, we're doing, but we're also sensing how we can correct. And not because we've done it wrong or because we screwed up, but because, oh, I had a little more tension in that than I thought I should have. Maybe I'll do it again. That's why I keep saying in a lot of the lessons, okay, come back and just pause. Come back to the center, what might center might be, right? Back to the starting point. Look around again, regroup, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, back to Nikolai. He then says, it must be performed many times to allow the brain sensory areas to become acquainted with all the variety of deviations and modifications and to combine a vocabulary for all future deciphering. So this speaks to, again, repetition, but deviations, modifications. If you can recall from the last training call, I said, try doing these lessons at different times of the day, right? Morning, noon, night. Try doing them in different parts of your home if you can. If you can, take your phone. If you've got a smartphone, which most people have these days, put in your little earbuds and take a lesson to the park. And do it, somewhere where it's safe to just be able to see and orient so that you're learning how to do these things in different environments. Very important. Then he keeps going. Certainly, the most sensible correction training would be organized in a way that combined a minimization of effort with a large variety of well-designed sensations and that created optimal conditions for meaningfully absorbing and memorizing these sensations. That's a very long way of saying one of the best ways for us to learn is to do it in different ways and to feel ourselves and our sensations no matter what's going on, right? Typically, not always, but typically, people will come back. I'm being very general here, but I know this happens. They'll remember to come back to SPSM when they hit another pain point or when something bad happens. I better go back to those lessons. That's fine, right? You want to use that as a resource, but we also want to do these when we're feeling okay or we're feeling not so bad so that we learn these wirings when we're not under intense survival stress. Right? I hope that makes sense. It's flipping a 180 degree, as most of the time we go and seek out help when we're in pain, when we're struggling. We call the therapist when we can't figure out a problem, right? These sorts of things. And again, there's nothing wrong with that, but how can we preload our learning so that we're doing it when things aren't so bad, so we strengthen those learning pieces with a little less survival stress. Okay. So thanks, Nikolai. You were ahead of your time. You were ahead of your time. And you know, for those of you who have not parents, some of us have parents, children, maybe you're soon to be parents, maybe you're a grandparent, maybe you're an auntie, maybe you work with kids. This is education for little ones. Different ways of teaching kids, different ways of doing things. Same thing, many different times, right? All the different ways that we can bring learning into how we read, how we speak, how we play, how we learn difficult subjects. All right, so to stimulate means to activate. So it's an activation. So this is in reference. So next line down, the pink line underneath the quote. To stimulate means to activate. It's not a bad thing. Right? But for some of us, we need to decouple that activation from fear. This is not on the handout. That's just my words right now. We have to separate activation from fear. What that means is when we were, say, brought up, and this would be key for those of you who have grown up in stressful environments, this concept of early developmental trauma, activation has been typically historically connected to bad things happening, right? Many of us may have had that. So what we have to start to understand is activation, our heart rate going up, isn't a bad thing. It's just a physiological response. And this is one reason why a lot of people struggle. This is just, again, one example with exercise, intense exercise. They feel their heart rate go up. They feel the blood pressure go up and it freaks them out because anytime the heart rate got elevated when they were young, it's because something threatening was occurring or we were doing something wrong and we were being screamed at or we were being hit or we were afraid. And I remember being with a girlfriend ages ago who was working on her stuff, Feldenkrais colleague of mine, and we went for a hike. And she always had struggled with activity and finding a healthy body weight. And I was so proud of her because we were walking and she started to feel the fear because we were going up a little incline and she caught it and she said, "I just need to pause and feel my heart rate and look around." We were in a beautiful area of British Columbia. I was like, great, let's just stand here. And I think there were some tears that came out with it because she saw, wow, I'm somewhere so beautiful and my heart rate is up and I'm not afraid. I don't have to be afraid. Right. So This is why it's not enough just to say to folks, hey, just go and exercise, just push, push, push. Now, we want to be able to push our body. We need to be able to insert vigor into our physical system. It is so important. But we also, if we know we have a history of fear with activation, we want to make sure we work with that so that that gets cleaned up in our nervous system. And so we can then go and be vigorous with our body, right? So back to this concept, stimulation means activation. It's not a bad thing. So this ability to decouple activation from fear is a big one. So the first letter there, A, this is anything that provides a stimulus to the nervous system. So again, this is activation, stimulation. B, next one. Sound, movement, light, and visualizing are all various kinds of stimuli into the human system. So we all know these things, A, B, and C under that one, walking, moving, dancing, listening to music, right? Singing, humming, being outside in the sun, having a warm bath or a cold shower, right? One of the reasons I know that there's been a preponderance of a lot of people doing, say, cold plunges, which, have the time and a place, but they stimulate the system. Take someone who's in a very shut down state and they feel themselves, they feel alive, right? It hits out that dopamine. So we also need to make sure we're not overactivating our system with practices. And this is again where it's very important to know your own system, know what your system needs, et cetera, titrate the activation, right? We still want to titrate these things. Final one there, the main purpose of stimulating the system is to challenge it, the system, and wake up. Those are the words, the two words there. Circuits in the system that have been asleep or have been simply taking a big long rest. That's the final word there, rest. That's just a very simple way of saying, again, if our tendency has been to be in kind of a shutdown, more lethargic, collapsed state, we need to bring some stimulation into the system. And this is where that might go against everything our nervous system physiology is telling us. It's telling us we have to hide, we have to stay small, we have to, not leave our home. All these connections with this high tone dorsal shutdown, that collapse physiology, and part of working with that is giving a little bit of a poke to the system and say, let's just try a little bit. Just to try a little bit. Right? Just a little bit. Not a bucket, but a little bit. Little bit of little drops. And then letting the system rest, letting the system recover. Okay, go to page three. So this is a continuation. So in SBSM, so Smart Body, Smart Mind, pretty much every single lesson and practical neurosensory exercise you did was a form of neurostimulation. Some form of neurostimulation. So just the act of doing some of the gentle Feldenkrais movements, for example, is still movement. There's still some exercise component into that. You're moving your body, you're noticing your breath, you're doing things that are a little different than what you might do. It's not going to create an aerobic effect, but it's still waking up the circuits. It's waking up the skeleton, the muscles, the fascia, all these things. So you moved, you touched, you learned by a constant the synthesis of thinking and sensing. You visualized, you made sound. right? The voos, the ahs, for those of you that went into those lessons, visualizing the kidneys, the diaphragms, resources, thinking about something that brings you a little bit of goodness. It doesn't have to be in your vicinity holding on. It can be an idea. This is where those who have strong faith comes in, source, God, right? That ability to connect to something that is not right there in front of us, but is there for us to tap into. There's so many things that we can visualize and connect to. So, first one there, this is still in relationship to neurostimulation. So, A, the Feldenkraisian way of learning. So, again, this is neurostimulation, is more potent. That's the word, potent, powerful. It's another word for potent, I believe. Then, many forms of neurostimulation. Because we're doing more than just following the leader, so to speak. Those are the words. We're doing more, you're doing more than just, you're not watching me, right? And I know for some it can be really difficult to just have audio and listen, but that's on purpose. It's on purpose because I want you to find it in yourself and not mimic me. Because the moment you see someone do something, you try to copy it with more will and force, and it's not coming from internal. A baby, when they're learning how to roll, they're doing it because it's in them. It's in our DNA to come up to our feet. They're not typically watching a parent on the ground rolling side to side, right? Parents that never do that, their babies still find a way to crawl. So what that shows me is it's written in us to be able to find these movements. It just, as adults, as grown-ups, we have to strip away some of this. Why won't you show me how to do this? I want you to just show me. It's like this, I can't follow. It's like just come back down, listen again, do one movement, right? One movement, tiny little bit, and then the next and the next. Now, of course, there's nothing wrong with going to a fitness class and doing aerobics or doing a sports routine. There's nothing, or a dance, nothing. Square dancing is fun. And you follow the leader, right? You follow a certain pattern and it's fun. I know that. But when it comes to relearning how to learn, this ability to really listen to your body through a little bit of guide and instruction is where I think it's a potent way of teaching ourselves how to be in our body and learn new things. Next one. So B, you're pausing between, again, this is in service of Feldenkrais and that level of learning that you're learning in SPSM here. You're pausing between your thoughts, images, sensations, feelings. That's that. Oh, this is so frustrating, right? Oh, I give up. I don't get it, right? Listen to that. The moment that comes in, that's juice to work with, right? It's like, oh, wow, I just got pissed off because I couldn't figure out what direction to roll my head. Like, where's that coming from? It's just rolling your head. Very simple, but it can bring up all this stuff. So then that's where you take a pause, you come back, and then you start again. So all these things, thoughts, images, sensations, feelings, reflexes, reactions, all of it. You're pausing between all of this of the imagined movement. So that's the word, imagined movement for my instruction and the actual movement. The imagined movement, because sometimes I'll have you notice what this might feel like before you do it. Just imagine it. Sense the movement before it happens. And our brains work that way. We can visualize a movement That's one thing we know about neuroscience that's set is we can visualize and it turns on the same pathways that actually do that movement. That's why athletes, you'll see them, you see it sometimes, certain sports like diving into water. If you watch them at the top, they're kind of going through the movement in their head and these little micro movements. They're rehearsing that dive, they're feeling it in their body. So we can also do that with our kidneys. That's why I say, imagine them floating in salty water. Imagine them lowering and coming down, chilling out, having a holiday, these sorts of things. Imagine there's space in these parts of your body. And then that's where we bring in touch, et cetera, et cetera. Next one. See, you're orchestrating, fancy word of saying doing, you're orchestrating. To me, it's more of an orchestra with the body. There's, it's a funner image if you think about an orchestra symphony, right? Lots of different instruments. So you're orchestrating a lot nervous system-wise when you're doing these neurosensory exercises. You're really, really asking yourself to pay supreme attention to yourself, the area that you're paying attention to, and the environment. Right? So you're really learning how to be with yourself, but in an active way. It's not just sitting there and trying to get your mind clear. You're doing, but it's in service of connecting to body and the environment, and often both at the same time. B, neuromodulation. So again, this is that regulation, building capacity, settling the noisy brain and nervous system. So the first one there, so this is another stage of neuroplastic healing sequencing. And also know that while I'm going through these linearly, they intertwine. And if you can imagine them in a sky, in a sphere, they're all kind of moving around each other, like the planets, right, in the universe. One just doesn't happen and then it stops, and then another happens and then it stops, and then the next one. As we do these neurostimulation pieces, there's capacity being built. Every now and again, when we fall, who has fallen asleep doing a lesson? Right, you're doing a lesson. Yep, you're activating your senses, and then all of a sudden, whew, you're out. You're then having a little nap. You're in that neuro relaxation. You're integrating. I think one of the reasons why often people fall asleep is they're thinking about their body. They're noticing their body. They're not in their mind thinking about the day or other things, right? So it really forces you to feel yourself. All right, so neuromodulation, the first bullet there. This stage is all about helping that noisy brain, that dysregulated brain, the monkey mind, maybe, and the autonomic nervous system. So, really helping those things become more regulated. That's the name of the game, regulation. And settled so it can have a chance to heal. So it can have a chance to heal and grow. Because we cannot heal if we don't get out of dysregulation. That's why it's not enough to just release trauma in one sweep. We have to build up the foundation so that we can integrate after we release those traumas, after we release that held emotion or that held procedural memory in our tissue. This comes back to the topic of today's call, application and integration. Right? It's great to maybe have a good cry, to get out some emotions, to move some healthy aggression out. But if we then pop back quickly into our survival stress and panic and go lifestyle, we just kind of slip back a little bit, right? So again, we need to be able to bring in all these things, not just when we're doing specific pieces of, say, trauma work. So the final one there on page three, depending on the person and their history, because everyone's different, everyone is different. That is a given because of how we're raised as humans, right? Even in the same family system, siblings will be raised differently depending on circumstance, right? It's different in the animal kingdom, right? In the animal kingdom. I live somewhere where there's geese that have little babies every year, little goslings. Nothing changes for those little ones, you know, like it's the same every year. Every year it's the same. Like I can't see anything different. You know, the grass is there, the bugs they're eating, the water they're learning how to swim on, learning how to fly, all these things. It's always the same. Those little ones get treated exactly the same. Humans are so different because we bring babies into the world. If we have a family of, say, three or even two, circumstance changes, right? What's going on in the world changes. The stress of the parents change, the food that's available or not available changes. The schools are different, maybe. The teacher is different. Those little baby geese don't get a different teacher. It's a goose, right? They do the same thing. So it's like when you really make that kind of funny comparison, I hope that that gives us a little bit of grace as to why. Working with humans and being a human is just a little more difficult than being a little goose, right? We really have a lot to consider. So this is all in service of this final bullet point. Depending on the person and their history, how to bring the system down and settle it will vary. That's a simple way to just say everyone is different, and what will work for one person isn't going to necessarily work for another person. And what might even work for you now might not work for you in a couple months because your system is different and you have a different level of capacity. Right? So we're complex. We're complex beings. So page four. So again, this is in service of neuromodulation. Neuromodulation. So for our purposes, the first three labs were dedicated to this. So I'm going to go through the labs and what we learned. So the first one there is orienting. Orienting. First line. Orienting can be a powerful tool for settling the system as it sparks up the parasympathetic nervous system, that social engagement nervous system, right, by looking around with awareness and feeling the head and neck. So that's those two words, head and neck, move. So we're stimulating through the movement of the head and neck, and it's allowing the system to know where it is, to see cognitively at least that danger actually isn't present, isn't actually present. Right. So if you think of this head, touch it if you want to, head and neck, right? Our senses are up here, eyes, ears, smell, taste. There's a lot going on above the shoulders. And so this ability to really have the head be a bit more free, to be less tense, to acknowledge that that is where all your senses are. It's also why we protect our head at all costs, because unconsciously, even if you don't think about it, we know our brain needs to be protected, right? And all of these sense organs. B, next one. B is for breathing, breathing. So we also did breathing neurosensory exercises to cultivate the inhale and exhale. They're placing a focus on the body, on the breath. So again, more neurostimulation. But they're not asking you to like breathe at a certain cadence or to count to a certain number and wait and then exhale. It's more of a exploration of how the chest, the belly, the ribs can shift and move, how we can work with the exhale and pause that exhale at the end, if you can recall from the cultivating the exhale, and wait for a natural breath to come. It will come. But this ability to be comfortable waiting at the end of that exhale. I read somewhere, I think it was in James Nestor's book, Breathe, really good book on breathing, and a funny book too. He's a funny writer, he's a journalist. Breathe by James Nestor is the book. He talks about, I think it was a study that said that a lot of times when people feel what we call anxiety, it's because they're not comfortable with high levels of CO2 in the system, panics them. And my sense is that that also occurs because we don't realize we're holding our breath. We're not letting go of the metabolic byproduct. And so we feel these higher levels of CO2, and then that can tip us into feeling danger, danger, because we need oxygen. We need to let out that gas and bring in new oxygen. So he speaks a bit about that on the book, and it aligned with this exercise of cultivating the exhale and waiting at the end and getting comfortable feeling a rise in that CO2 in your blood gases. Right. I don't go into that detail in the lesson, but that's one of the benefits of practicing that. It's called cultivating the exhale. So, moving on to this one. So, just this basic, that's the word, just this basic shift in attention can help settle the system and bring it to rest, working with these inhale, exhale lessons. This also serves to increase awareness, capacity, and help lessen the bracing. Bracing is the word there. That's holding, putting up our guard around our ribs, right? Around our tissues, around our lungs, that occurs in the true diaphragm due to stored traumatic experience, toxic and chronic stress, etc. Because think about it, right? When we have something scary happen, what do we do? Right? We stop our breath. We go into a bit of a shock state. We freeze. Freezing doesn't just freeze the nervous system, it freezes all of the tissues, and especially those lungs, especially the tissues around that diaphragm, around the heart area. That's why we use that term. That person has a lot of armor around their heart. Right? Can't get into that person's heart. Like it's kind of a metaphor, but it's literal. Like there's so much tissue that's guarded and stuck and frozen. And so again, gentle breath work can start to help open up some of that, but we can't just force the breathing. This is why I think, I have respect for those that do breath work when they do it well. Because some people can do really good breath work, but it cannot be forced. Because if you're forcing an inhale and an exhale on a braced system that is frozen or shut down, I can't think of a clever metaphor right now. There's one out there, but it's just not going to work. You're not getting, it's like the key into the wrong hole, right? It's like square key, round hole, not going to work. So again, this goes back to this neuromodulation that we're working with. And how we can stimulate the system, but only so much that the system can take. And again, these lessons are a very gentle way of opening up that breath area. So again, remember, it's important to redo these lessons because you'll get more nuance in those lessons now that you've had more experience with the other lessons. All right. C, potent posture. Potent posture. So again, this is from the earlier labs. Well, more stimulating due to the standing upright position, right? It was done in standing. It's challenging the body's balance organs, which are in the inner ear, So that's another sensory organ I forgot to mention when I was talking about the brain and the head. Our inner ear has all of our little balance organs. If you've ever had an infection in those ear organs, you know that it can be really uncomfortable. You get vertigo, you get nauseous. It can happen after head trauma, for example. So again, challenging our posture might seem like, oh, what, not a big deal, right? But when we've been living through the world with patterns, we might not notice that we're in a asymmetrical posture all day long, which causes tension in the body. So prone posture, while more stimulating due to the standing position, is challenging the body's balance organs and is demanding a focused, that's the word, focused attention to body position in standing, which in turn, due to this focused attention, can settle the nervous system. So if you can recall from that lesson, I'm asking you to go a little bit too far back, a little too far forward. You can even do that in sitting if you have a chair that allows you to do that. If you hang out a little too far, kind of off center, eventually, and you feel this more if you're talking, right? So if I were to teach to you guys back here, A, it would be very difficult. I'd have to pause a lot more, and I'd have tight abdominals and hip flexors at the end of 90 minutes. Same if I'm too far forward. But if I then come back, there's a space where the system goes, ah, that's less effort. And that's what that lesson is teaching us. It's a beginner's way of getting into potent posture, but it's a very subtle, it's a powerful way of proving to yourself, oh yeah, when I'm far off, I'm working more. And when I come back to what might be called center, the breath can be a bit freer. The head can be freer, right? If you sit far back and try to look around yourself, it's much harder because the muscles are in tension. D, next one, diaphragms. Joints, kidneys, adrenals, brainstem, that rolling of the head, the gut brain, the mediastinum exercises. So all these lessons are bringing more focused attention. There's that word again, attention, attention to even more specific parts of the systems of the body. Right? So kidney adrenals become a lot of our favorites. Some of you will go back to that over and over again. Don't underestimate that joint lesson from lab three, where I taught you with the wrist. Know that you can transfer that to the elbow, to the collarbone joints, the shoulder, the hip, the knee, the ankle, the knuckles, the toes. There's even little. They're not technically called joints, but there's areas of the skull where the skull bones come together, right? Anybody that has an understanding of osteopathy and cranial sacral, we know that we want breathing in our skull bones. And so even this joint lesson could be brought to the skull. So you can do a lot by replaying that joint lesson and focusing on a different part of the body. All right. Diaphragms, I would say the diaphragm lessons probably playtime wise have the most amount of audio in SBSM because there's these different levels, right? Higher shoulders, the true diaphragm, which is around the solar plexus, the pelvic area, right? Even though there were no diaphragm lessons for the top of the head, the rolling of the head lessons, that brings in that top of the head diaphragm area. And then in the final labs, there's two lessons called advanced joints and advanced diaphragms that are longer, right? And that's another opportunity to practice with that intention, focusing your attention on those areas. Back in the day when I was in private practice, I would say that 90% of my time was spent working with the diaphragms, the joints, and the kidney adrenals. Full stop. There was a lot of silence, just lots of holding, lots of noticing. Because until that area can, these areas can have some flow. This is back to number one training call. Remember the little circles I had you draw? That was so long ago. That is a depiction of all these areas that need to have breathing space in them and connection between all of them. It's the premise of Chinese medicine and acupuncture points, right? It's the qi, right? The life force. I'm sure in Ayurvedic medicine, there's a similar word for it. And then in osteopathic, it's this ability for this central line to be in good center because all of these spaces are feeding in to that symmetry. So for those of you, again, this is your first round of SPSM. You're going, oh my God, there's so much here. Just know that it's all in service of bringing connection to this entire system. And then with that, we're growing capacity. It's very hard to have full healthy aggression if any of these diaphragms are shut down. Right? It's very hard to be supple in our spine if our joints, any joint in our body, is tight. Right? And it takes time. And I've been doing this forever. My system, I'm still working on this stuff. Right? It takes time to open up all these joints and all these diaphragms and get them singing and humming at once. And then something happens, and then we get thrown off a little bit, and then we work on it a little bit more. We have some more capacity, and that allows for other layers to come up. So it's one sneaky little sentence there. Diaphragms, joints, kidney, adrenals, brainstem, etc. But there is a lot, to focus on in those lessons. So again, if you want to just hang out with the diaphragm lessons for a month or two this summer, do it. There's no harm in that. It's again, like I said, if I was working with people one-on-one, that's what we might do for 2 months, or that's what we might do for 2 years, is just working on those diaphragms and seeing what emotion and memory and movement comes out as those spaces become more free. Final bullet point there, E. Plus, it's kind of a continuation. There's more visualization of the system opening up, right? So, this visualization of the system opening up, that's the word opening, more space increasing, and even in the case of the kidney adrenals, a decrease, that's the final word of the page, a decrease of the body's stress chemicals. So this visualization, it impacts the biochemistry. It impacts the stress physiology. And this is why we do this over and over again. We don't just do the kidney adrenals once. We repeat it. We repeat it over and over again to keep telling the system, hey, it's okay. Hey, it's okay. Hey, it's okay. You can come down. You can chill out. We're trying to find that safe haven through our own intention and our own work. All right, page five. Someone asked, I did mention this. We don't directly work with the diaphragms of the head because that comes in when we do the rolling head lessons. And also when we're working with the connecting the head and the pelvis, we're still touching our head gently, right? When we orient, we're working with the head. When we're making sound, we're also working with the head. So we're actually working with the head quite a bit throughout the lessons. I'm just not naming it diaphragm work. And also, When you're laying down, depending on people's shoulder mobilities, it's harder to touch there and be relaxed, whereas other movements are a bit more accessible. Excuse me, at the top of the head. So, but if one can go and work with an osteopath or a craniosacral therapist, that's a perfect way to have that crown, that top of the head be worked with. Okay, page five. So we're still working on the neuromodulation. So bottom line, top of the page there. By bringing the focus and attention to key stress organ systems, that's my way of calling the kidney, adrenals, brainstem, gut, and to the areas of the body that get tight and shut down. Shut down is the word, such as the joints, diaphragm, excuse me, and mediastinum spaces. As a result, let me just cough for a second, you guys. Getting warm. All right, so back to this. Where was I? Into the areas of the body that get tight, shut down, such as the joints, diaphragm, mediastinum spaces, as a result of excess toxic stress, we are facilitating a shift. So we're working with all these things. We're facilitating a shift from survival, that's sympathetic. So the word there is survival, sympathetic fight flee energy, and parasympathetic freeze shutdown energy. Sorry, the line there is a bit tight. Freeze shutdown energy to the social engagement mammalian parasympathetic energy. There's a lot of words there. So we're basically taking this attention, bringing attention to these key stress organ systems, right? And to the areas of the body that get shut down, such as the joints, the diaphragms, the mediastinum spaces, all a result of toxic stress, trapped trauma. We're facilitating a shift from this survival, sympathetic fight flight, and this freeze shutdown energy to social engagement and that mammalian parasympathetic energy, also known as that ventral vagal, if I bring in that other word. We could also say rest digest in there, right? But a rest digest. Said another way, so middle of the page, in order to become more evolved humans, I'm being very specific, evolved humans rather than our survival-based human way of being. So in order to become more evolved humans, when we're under duress or stress that isn't life-threatening, we want to lessen the time we are in our high dorsal vagal shutdown, freeze, parasympathetic nervous system, and also that high fight flight to a lot of ventral vagal. What's the word? Ventral vagal social engagement in that low tone dorsal, that true rest digest of the parasympathetic nervous system. So those two sentences or paragraphs, I should say, are kind of like the cheat sheet of the biology of stress videos in some ways. We want to go out of these high survival based fight, flight, freeze, shutdown, collapse energies, and we want to move ourselves into more of that ventral vagal connection and low tone dorsal, that rest digest energy. For any of us that, has been living in that world of more survival-based physiology, as you're learning, it takes time to shift the system out of that. We can't We can't just turn the switch. And the reason why is we have all of these systems that we've been talking about, right? Not so much digestion today, but the layers, the way the brain works, the way we move, right? The way we hold ourselves, the way our organs are situated in our viscera, all of that is impacted by the survival stress that we carry. And so to try to fix one thing and make it better, and this is a big common thing we're seeing these days, is a lot of these biohacks to try to like get the vagus nerve working again quicker. The trouble with these things is it's not taking into account the rest of the body that has to catch up with that. So it might create a state shift in, say, the heart rate or the blood pressure, or the tone might change. But then what about the immune system and the hormonal system and the cardiovascular system and our skeletal system and the fluid system, the lymph? It will be like, what did you just do? I don't know what to do with this change. Right. So the approach we're taking is much slower, obviously. We're taking a lot more time, but we're moving all these systems forward in little tiny doses so that they can then, I'm going to use my hands back to our little circles from training call number one, so that every time we move forward with a little bit more capacity, a bit more modulation, regulation, they all come together. I hope that's making sense. All these systems are coming together as opposed to one fast tracking and the other's like, wait. And then that's where we might have a flare, or that's where we might have a pain that's just unbearable. It's like, whoa, you just cracked me open and I don't know what to do with all that change. And then what happens? We shut back down or we overactivate, right? So that's like it's taken us this many months to go from that training call number one with the little circles to all of this coming together at the same time. And it takes patience and repetition and watching the parts of you that want to speed it up and get frustrated because you feel like you're behind. So it's all very natural that these things are occurring. You just got to keep going. So final sentence there for neuromodulation. We want to go from reptilian to mammalian to human. I'll explain what that means in a second. We want to go from reptilian to mammalian to human. Basically, the reptilian part of our nervous system, those are the survival mechanisms, right? It's the primitive part of our nervous system. It's the unmyelinated part of the vagus nerve. It's why reptiles and amphibians don't have that ventral vagal. They're very able to move quick. But it's very hard to have a conversation with that gecko on the side of your wall when you're visiting a hotter country. It doesn't want to talk to you. It's like zoom, it's out or it's frozen. Right? The little stray kitty though that finds you is a little different. It's looking for friendly connection because it's got that mammalian nervous system. Right? It's got the mammalian nervous system. And so we've still got that reptilian in us. We all have it in us. Then we've got, of course, the mammalian system. And then human, we're human, as far as I know. And humans, you know, we've got this ability to change direction, to pause and to reroute something and to reflect. But we also, as we know, have an ability to ruminate on the past and on the future. And so that's where we have to really work on watching when we go into those thought patterns. People often say, oh, it's the reptile brain. It actually, when we're ruminating it, that's not reptile brain. That's human brain. That's human brain that is unchecked and dysregulated, right? The reptilian side of us and the mammalian side is the survival side. It's the one protect at all costs, right? It's the bear protecting its mama, or it's the mama bear protecting its cubs. And we have that in us too. So that's what we want. We want to go to this more evolved human state. All right. Final two, neurorelaxation. Neurorelaxation is the easiest one because that just means rest and digest. There's not much there, right? We just need to rest. We need to sleep well. I think it's a good thing that people are realizing that sleep is important in the more popular press worlds of health and wellness. Forget who it was, some female entrepreneur that put sleep on the market. What was her name? She was burning herself out and she fell in her office and cracked her head open because she fell asleep standing up. Arianna Huffington, the Huffington Post. And thank you. And she was like, oh, I got to change something. And so she got obsessed with sleep and the importance of needing to rest. So I don't know if she's embodying all the other things, but she's probably getting a good night's sleep. But we need the sleep. It's important. And of course, getting good sleep means having more regulation on board. So for some of you, your sleep still might be a mess. And just know that eventually it does change, but you got to keep moving forward and keep growing capacity. And it might shift. Like there might be some days where you, or weeks or months, where your system is at another level and it's at a new level of capacity. And in that new level of capacity, you're feeling more fear. You're feeling more of that fight flight that you've stored in so cleverly in your functional freeze. This was me. And so your sleep might go off for a little bit because you're more alert to sounds and things and your own heart rate. But it changes. It does change, but you got to keep moving forward. That's where you do not want to stop doing this work. You want to keep going forward. The system wants to sleep. That's where we can learn from our mammal friends, right? Dogs and cats have no trouble sleeping. Animals in the wild, no trouble sleeping, typically, right? Typically. The domestic animals sometimes do, but that's usually because the humans around them are stressed out. So, this ability to really be mammalian and just be able to just go into a deep sleep, that's what we want. So the first thing here, last sentence of page five. Again, depending on where we are in our lives, our demands, tasks, jobs, we might not always get what we need. This is especially true for new parents. You will not get enough sleep because your job is to take care of that new human. And that's just part of it, right? It is part of it. But when we can rest sleep, we want to ooze. That's the fun word there. When we can sleep and rest, we want to ooze. We want to be full with that low tone. Low tone is the two words, dorsal branch of the parasympathetic nervous system. Page six. Final bullet point for that one. Personal assessment is a must. Personal assessment is a must, and you must change and prioritize to suit your needs. Your needs. Personal assessment is a must. One thing that I have found many of my students, clients, find, especially if they have partners, husbands, wives, and they have the ability to do this, it depends on your living space. You may find that you start sleeping alone if you're with a partner. Because I find personally, and I've heard more and more people say as they get more regulated, they don't want to sleep next to anybody, which is like the opposite of what babies need. Babies need to sleep with a parent, right? Back to mammals, you would never have a litter of kittens or puppies alone in the wild. The cubs are with the mother. And I have spoken, even though I haven't birthed my own biological babies, those who are coming back to more natural ways, find that their sleep is pretty good when they co-sleep with their kids and babies because they're just with everyone is in the same space. Everybody's together, there's safety, there's less stress, and the sleep is actually a lot easier. Doesn't mean you sleep all the time, but it's easier. So again, this is why I put in this personal assessment is a must. And don't be afraid to ask for your own room. Now, someone said, I wanted my own bedroom for years, and my boyfriend thinks it's a bad idea. Well, this is the thing. It's like if we're secure in our relationship, one might say it doesn't matter where you sleep, right? It's like you got to get your rest. And especially when you're processing old stuff, it becomes problematic if you're needing to let go of flight and fight energy in the middle of the night and your partner is sound asleep and you start kicking the bed because you need to get that energy out, right? So again, everybody's different, but sometimes it is very important to have your own space. All right, final one, neurodifferentiation. Again, this is a bit of a repeat. Feldenkraisian learning is neurodifferentiation. Feldenkraisian learning is neurodifferentiation. It is all about neurodifferentiation when you do anything Feldenkrais-based. Because you're not just doing the movement for the sake of doing the movement, you're feeling the movement, you're sensing the movement. You're correcting the movement. You're doing different options of the movement. B, how can we make the learning more complex? That's the word, more complex, and still keep up the neuromodulation? This is the tricky one. So, when you get to those lessons in lab 10, if you're there now, you'll find that there's a little bit more complexity. You're being asked to do more than one or two or three things at a time. Watch your breath. Watch your ability to continue to orient. See if you start to clench. See if you start to tense. Because going into those higher levels of neurodifferentiated learning and bringing more stress in is defeating the purpose. We want to go into those with ease, without more tension in the body. And so that's where you have to bring your human brain on and really sense and scan for parts in your body that are grasping, clenching. Is the forehead starting to crunch because you're thinking really hard about what you're doing? Right? That's one thing that you can always pay attention to. And I bring that to your attention too. I remind you in those lessons to keep coming back to the center. Final long-winded sentence of the training call. See, it all comes down to continually challenging and testing ourselves. Testing ourselves. And breaking out of our comfort zones, while staying present. That's the next word. And oriented. Next word is oriented to ourselves and our environment. It all comes down to continually challenging and testing ourselves and breaking out of our comfort zones while staying present and oriented to our environment, to ourselves and our environment. Final notes, continually recalibrating and lowering our stress. That's the word. Stress chemistry, our survival chemistry, another way of saying it. And remembering to go back to the basics. Frequently. The basics are so important. They're like, the bread and butter of this work. As some of you know, I have been doing a almost a year-long practitioner training, called SPT, Science Intuitive Practitioner Track. Some of you might be joining some of the lessons that the students are teaching over the next 3 weeks. All we've focused on since September, true story, orienting, following impulse, potent posture, following breath, not changing it, and resources. That's it for 8 months. Now, we do things around it. There's theory. We do some Feldenkrais, we're in person, but in terms of their teaching and in terms of the practices and what we keep coming back to, it's those five key pieces. Now, this doesn't mean that that's all that a person needs. Of course not. But we've kept it simple and kept it in a constraint of these are what we have to embody as a starting point to go to other levels. And so I just wrote it, really want to share that to remind everyone that if you just get to the first few labs, that is a lot to work with and a lot to master. Do not feel like you are behind if you haven't gotten past lab two or three. There's still so much in learning how to use your resources, how to orient, how to find those impulses, how to find potent posture, and also how to integrate those into your daily life. So just really be gentle with yourself, because when you're not gentle with yourself, that tends to make this work stop, right? We find a way to stop the work because we feel like we're behind. So don't let that infect your brains, infect your thinking. Just know you've got this amazing resource that you can come back to, and it's there for you to use, right? So thank you, everyone. Thanks, Rebecca and Ari, for being here. Thanks to all the newbies and the alum. We will do a wrap-up call next Tuesday. Obviously, everyone's welcome. Seth will have another Q&A this Thursday. Moderation will continue in the site for 4 weeks into the end of June. And then we'll rerun and we'll start up again with a new fresh round in mid-September, which will be here before we know it. So you've got some time to integrate and apply. So thanks everybody for being here on this Tuesday or listening to the recording. If you're here on the recording, we'll see you next week. Bye.